I've had individuals say to me, why should I be the one to change the way that I speak? I'm intelligent, I can do the job, etc. This is about empowerment. This is not about pulling us out of our power. In my opinion, empowerment is having conscious choice. Disempowerment is when I just do something out of habit with no awareness and no opportunity for change.
Your voice shapes how the world perceives you. The voice can project power, and it can cause judgment, sometimes unfairly. So, how can you take control of your voice and make sure other people listen? Hi, everyone. I'm Celeste Headley. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. In this episode, I speak to Hillary Wicht, an acclaimed expert in executive leadership coaching. Her expertise in communication and vocal training will be invaluable to you. You'll learn about how to detect your own vocal quirks and power leaks in your communication style and how to correct them. Plus, we'll talk about the all too common experience of being interrupted and how to handle it with grace. As an executive coach, one of the things you focus on is voice. Why? Why that?
Yeah, the way that we extend who we are, what we value, our ideas that we bring to the table, what's in our hearts, what's in our minds, it all comes through the vehicle of voice. It is literally our calling card out into the world. And when I started to explore the aspects of voice, not just from the ability to create outer realities, but what it means also from an inner reality, or more specifically from a psychological place, to feel like we don't have our voice in the world, feel like we don't have the power to create our identity. I really started looking at the direct correlation between how people can create certain opportunities by the ways that they show up, by the ways that they speak up, by the ways that they utilize their voice, by the way that they talk about themselves, or simply by the ways that they are able to articulate certain things. And I found that having access to stronger voice really was a direct correlation to an individual's ability to create fulfillment and success in their life. And I'm sure we can all think of countless people who are in certain positions that, gosh, they sound really great, but if we took a couple of minutes to listen to what they're actually saying, we could question, how in the heck did they get into that role?
And yeah, it sounds like garbage. Yeah.
Yeah. And in an opposite regard, I know so many people who would be incredible leaders, incredible, like the best fit for the job. But because of the ways that they, again, communicate with their voice, they don't get those opportunities. So I really wanted to start debunking the myths around all of that. You know, we hear so often, have your voice in the world, but honestly, what the heck does that mean? And how do you get it? And what's the cost if you don't have it? And so I really started taking a parallel look at that phenomenon, both with my background as a voice performer, as a professional backup singer to major label artists, and as a voiceover talent on commercials and a recording solo artist myself, but then also my background in psychology. And I just started the weaving the thread of what I now refer to as the outer game of voice and also the inner game of voice.
So when you say voice, are you talking about the sound and timbre and tone of my voice, the voice I can hear? Or are you talking about that more metaphoric voice, which is the way I express myself?
Both. So the way that I express myself is going to be directly related to the level of permission internally I give myself to be seen, valued, and heard. So there is an inner voice that we all have that has been developed through our various experiences, majority of them really being profound in the first 7 years of life, as we understand in child psychology, that really sets the stage for our personality, for the ways we interact with the world, for the ways we interpret the world interacts with us. And we have narratives, we have voices, stories that we run often very subconsciously that will determine what risks we allow ourselves to take, how big or bold we allow ourselves to be, how small we might keep ourselves because it's safer. This is the metaphorical, as you put it, voice. And it really, that the inner will shape the outer. You cannot move a system to have a different expression externally until you work on it internally. And so that internal is the foundation, it's the root. When we get a better awareness and have some more practices around that particular aspect of voice, then it is about the timbre, the tonation, the pacing. I had a really interesting discovery probably in my 20s, before I actually started executive coaching. And I didn't know that this was a phenomenon of any sense, but I literally could listen to someone's sound. And because of my background in voice, could not only dictate specifically where the sound was coming from and the anatomical instrument itself, but I also could get a really clear psychological, or what we sometimes refer to as ontological, read on why the voice was where it was at. So if I'm listening to someone who might have a voice that's a little bit pulled back, like I'm doing with my voice here, and I'm putting it in a vocal fry, I again can mention to you what I'm doing specifically anatomically with the voice, but from an ontological or psychological perspective, this is an internal system that is feeling depleted, that it needs to be small, that it's not safe for it to be fully expressed. And so you can listen to the voice, and while majority of people aren't getting all of that information, they do get a felt sense experience. And that translates then to, okay, this is how I feel when I'm around this person. And then we as humans in our infantility, we then say, and so that must be what that person is, which of course is not the truth, right? But that's why for me, really understanding the full breadth of what voice is so important, because it is literally, I mean, the first thing that you and I did, we're not even looking at each other.
Yeah.
We're speaking. And so how do we create connection? How do we extend our value and our ideas and our passions into the world through this vehicle of voice? It's so important because it truly is the way in which we connect with others.
So I want to make sure our listeners are keeping up with us. Ontology is just, it's a metaphysical term referring to sort of the nature of being. When you talked about vocal fry for our listeners, this is this sound when you kind of let your voice go down and rasp. We're going to go into specifics of how people can fix certain vocal techniques first, and then I'd like to talk a little bit more about that more metaphoric sound of finding your voice. But you know, I was a professional opera singer. I want to make sure that neither one of us slips into shop talk and our listeners don't understand what we're talking about. So I want to talk about some common vocal problems people have, and see if you have suggestions on how to fix them. First of all, so much of this is gendered. You know, in other words, people complain about vocal fry when women use it, and yet men engage in vocal fry all the time. Yes. Also, there's the gendered criticism of up talk. Like if I were to talk like this, usually at the end of my sentence, that's often very often criticized in women, but not in men. So is, you know, I would love to say that we don't have to pay attention to the sexism of voice, but is that practical? Do we need to sort of bow?
No, there are, you know, there are different communication rituals that are assigned to genders. And this is not to get into the language heaviness of it, but this is a study called sociolinguistics. And we find that individuals express specific vocal communication rituals, or it doesn't even have to be vocal, it can also be nonverbal. So just general communication rituals related to gender specific identification as early as 5. Mm. So I identify as female, you identify as female. I know for me, a lot of the messaging that I got was be a good girl. You want people to like you. Don't be so bossy. Talk about those formative years from 1 to 7, where we're getting all of that, you know, messaging from our parents, from our environments, from our teachers. And we're those sponges at that time, right? We're absorbing our environment completely. That is creating an inner narrative that is then going to be a part of my inner voice, which will then impact how I can have my outer voice in the world. For males, it's usually very different. Oftentimes, younger, you know, little boys are said, don't cry, toughen up, make it happen, go be the winner. And again, creating a very different internal voice that is going to create a very different outer expression.
This relates to both the way we use our vocal instruments, but it also relates to what we say and, mm-hmm. and our voices themselves. A woman who is very forthright, who speaks directly, we know through research that they are much more likely to be rated unlikable, dominating, angry, not just by men, but by women as well. Mm-hmm. So do we have to, in order to get ahead in our fields, do we have to learn how to be, as women, less? Do we have to be more likable? Do we have to conform to that sexist stereotype?
Put that way, heck no, right? you know, if we're talking about a platform here that is majorly in large corporate America, which is a more male-dominated archetype. It just is, right? Yeah. My hope is that we are in, you know, the beginning throes of shifting that a bit. And it's certainly nowhere near even middle. It's like I said, it's the beginning. But I've had individuals say to me, why should I be the one to change the way that I speak? I'm intelligent. Yeah. I'm, you know, I can do the job, etc. And I always go back to, we have to create relatability. And if I'm in an audience of individuals who, for the most part, communicate with some of those more male of center communication rituals, where I know that they are going to be listening for rank. I know that they are going to respond to certain aspects of authority or confidence. I know that very differently from my female counterparts, they are not in this environment or this communication to create equality. They are actually mining for the hierarchy, which is very different than when majority of women are communicating. We actually are communicating and interacting in a communication experience for the sake of creating equality. I need to know my audience. And the way that I liken it is, it's very similar to if I really wanted to go to, let's say, a foreign country, and I really wanted to make an influence and an impact there. If I decided that I had the chops to do that, but I didn't want to learn any of the customs, I didn't want to adopt any of the formalities that they use in their communication style, good luck being able to really penetrate, connect, move people to action with the valuable things that you have to share in that particular region, because there's no coherent relatability that allows that person to even open up the door to start listening to what you have to say. So my answer is twofold. Number one, we need to be aware of our audiences. Number two, this is about empowerment. This is not about pulling us out of our power. In my opinion, empowerment is having conscious choice. Disempowerment is when I just do something out of habit, with no awareness and no opportunity for change. Oftentimes I will hear from people, and this is so important, authenticity really matters. It really, really does. And one of the analogies that I use, Celeste, is when I go to open my closet, I don't see only one color of garment. I see a myriad of colors. I don't just see all turtlenecks. I see tank tops. I see short sleeves. I see sweatshirts. And these are things that I've collected throughout the years. Sometimes I trade them out. Sometimes I'm like, I'm done with this. I will not be putting this back on. But I have a variety of things to choose from that allow me to consciously express myself, in this instance, through what I have on, depending on the mood I'm in, who's going to be there, the functionality of the day. I go through a myriad of questions. And although I might have my favorite sweater that's got holes all up and down the sleeve because the moth got to it and I said, oh my gosh, I don't care, I'm not getting rid of this, to, you know, my high power suit and everything in between, it doesn't mean that those articles of clothing are not authentic to me. They just allow me to express a different aspect. And I like to bridge that to this idea of communication. When we have more access to the fullness of ourselves, fullness of expression, we have more aspects of ourselves to choose from. And when we're doing that consciously, when I go into a meeting and I say, okay, this is a meeting about collaboration. We've got some heated, charged conversation in the room. I really want to bring that down. I want to create a sense of collaboration. I want a sense of, create a sense of support and partnership. And I also want to create a sense of moving a project forward. My awareness of all of those outcomes will absolutely shape what communication I choose to utilize throughout that meeting, what communication style. So very similar to what I might open up my closet and say, what are the things that I want to be navigating for in this in the day or in this meeting? I'm thinking the same way about my communication style. And what it does is it allows me to be more effective. So for me, I'm interested in what's going to allow me to be most effective. Not necessarily getting into what's right or wrong, because that is a whole other topic that's worthy of my exploration, worthy of our exploration as a collective. But if I am knowing that I am in an environment where there's a certain communication ritual that's going to be identified, maybe even warranted as better, if I'm making the choice to be in that environment, I believe I owe it to myself to utilize my energy and my attention to understanding how I can be most effective in that environment while staying in my power. I really want to be clear about that. It's not that I'm trying to become something that I'm not. It is about that option where I open up the closet and I say, what aspects do I want to put on here? What aspects am I not going to put on here? And that to me is empowerment because it's a conscious choice.
That and very practical.
Yes, I'm trying to.
Yeah. Yes. Super practical. So yeah. Let's get into some of these more nitty gritty. There is so much in what you just said, but let's start with some really common vocal problems, tangible vocal problems. For example, a lot of people have trouble being kind of monotone, right? The range yes. of their voice is maybe five notes. And that yes. can be very grating on a listener. How do you fix that?
Yes. And so as we're talking about gender communication rituals, men display this communication ritual more than women. Yeah. And we can see why that might be if we go back to our conversation around those gender communication rituals that are instilled in us early on. If I'm getting the message as a young male that emotion is not good, well, guess what? How that's going to impact my outer expression. I'm not going to have a lot of emotionality. And so when we're talking about monotone, a lot of our emotionality comes into our voice with the coloration of our voice, which I know that you know that term, but it's more specifically, it's the melody of our speaking style. How often do I go up into these upper registers, and then how often do I come down? And again, everything in between. And so monotone is where, as you stated, you have an individual who is speaking, gosh, maybe between one or two notes, and sometimes even those notes are half notes. And so it leaves their messaging, regardless of what it is they're saying, falling flat, because it has no emotional intelligence to it. It has no melody, which really is the way that as human beings, we interpret emotion. The part of the brain that interprets emotion does not get emotion from language itself. It gets emotion from different things like perception, sensation, memory. And so especially if I'm talking about sensation, if I'm just speaking in one tone for the whole time, this is, even if I have really incredible things to say, there's very little sensation. There's very little variety going on here. It's going to make it really difficult for my audience to stay connected to that. But if I'm speaking with more inflection, you can think of it as a drive, you know, kind of through some soft rolling hills. That's kind of a visual that I like to give people, versus, you know, on a straight shot highway through Vegas or something. We're doing these soft rolling hills, and that automatically starts to allow my listener to engage more deeply with the information that I have to say. It also allows me, again, to express more of the true meaning that I've got. I can sound more believable. I can sound like I have more conviction. And so specifically speaking, when getting out of monotone, we need to increase the speaking range of the individual and really get them used to utilizing more of those soft rolling hills. And that doesn't mean to do it just at whim, because that is going to sound very weird if we're just constantly doing that. So, my biggest thing, Celeste, is always to encourage people to really be mindful. It's about creating congruency. So when I'm congruent between what I'm saying and how I'm saying it, that allows me to impact and influence at my highest ability. So for instance, if I have someone that's saying the word surprise, I don't even need to have a sentence, right? But the word surprise, if we were to ask some really basic questions, is that an increase in energy or a decrease in energy? Is that usually going to be an upward inflection with the voice, or would we think that as a downward inflection with the voice? If we just ask ourselves some really basic questions, the word itself really helps us to express it in its most believable manner. So I wouldn't say, oh my gosh, I'm so surprised. That feels very incongruent.
Yeah.
But if I say, oh my gosh, I'm so surprised, now I'm creating congruency there. And that's what's allowing me to communicate effectively.
You know, this requires people to realize that they're doing this, right? I often hear people who use the same exact, their voices may not be within the same five note range, may not be monotone, mm-hmm. but they use the same exact rhythm and tone of all their sentences, as though I were going to say this and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I can't bear it, but they can't hear that, right? How do you, who do you go to help you realize what your, I guess, vocal tics are?
Well, definitely that is my specialty. So voice coaching is something I don't know if it is as prevalent, but certainly speech therapists might be something, a resource to check out. My experience has been with the majority of the executives that I work with, there just isn't a lot of individuals who focus so specifically on these things. That you can do speaker training and these types of things for, presentations, which I also do. But really diving in on the vocal aspects is something that's a bit of a black box, and why I've loved bringing this to the field and having so much success with what I do, because it is such an important part of our everyday experiences, and yet has really kind of gone untouched for as prevalent as it is in our ability to create the lives that we want personally and professionally. One of the things that I find when I'm coaching people is, as you mentioned, Celeste, awareness is the first step, as yeah. as with any self-development, right, or growth. And yeah. oftentimes people will start to be able, once they're aware of the tick, they will then be able to start to recognize it in others first. It is very common, you mentioned the word uptalk earlier in the session. It's very common for people to get into a session with me or me doing a team training and they say, oh my gosh, I hate uptalk. And I'm yeah. thinking to myself, really? Do you know that you're doing it right now? that's the first step, is being able to identify it, right? And then the next step for learning is, okay, now I'm going to catch it within myself. And that does take more concerted effort. It does usually take someone, just like an athlete, you need to have a coach that's saying, see where you just dropped your arm right there? In this regard, see where you just did that little inflection at the end of the word? That's exactly what I'm talking about. And then exploring, oftentimes, again, for me, it's so important for people to understand why they might be doing that, not just how to get out of that. Oftentimes, people will use that inflection of uptalk because they're trying to create warmth. They're yeah. trying to indicate that there's something more that they're going to say. And so when we can understand why, we can actually really start to shift into different practices or different ways of being that allow us to not even have the tick anymore. I don't usually refer to it as a vocal tick, but I will here in this instance. When I can understand the purpose of it, I sometimes can take care of itself completely because now I understand what I'm really trying to do, and the practice kind of trades itself out for a more efficient or effective one.
You're listening to my conversation with executive leadership and communication coach Hillary Wicht. If you're looking for more great career advice, check out the Career Connections program. It is a free year-round career development resource from the Conferences for Women. Whether you're looking to advance in your current role or find the next best move, you'll benefit from real-world expert advice and our supportive community. Plus, access to hiring managers at companies that are committed to supporting women in the workplace. Join for free today at conferencesforwomen.org. Now, let's get back to the conversation. So if you are beginning this journey of fixing your tangible, fixing sounds harsh, but addressing.
Refining, maybe. Yes. Yeah, bringing more awareness.
Yeah, the sound of your voice and the way that you speak. Let's talk about practical advice for how to address your metaphoric voice. I think that it's rare for people to know what their voice is.
Yeah. We've all been raised in an environment where, especially for women, where our success, our worth, comes from how much we focus on others. And we are really not encouraged to drop in, tune in, check out to the rest of the world, drop into ourselves. More things like mindfulness and meditation certainly have come on the scene in the last 10 years and are gaining more and more credibility and visibility also in the corporate workplace. And we need more examples and more encouragement on ways to really tune in with ourselves. One of the ways that I really advocate for people to get in touch with their inner voice is through journaling. And I love journaling because it is the cousin of voice. I'm not giving audible voice to something, but I am giving thought and emotion a place. I'm honoring it. I am expressing it. I am communicating a truth. And what I love about journaling is that it doesn't require anyone else for it to be successful. In fact, it's more successful when it is just me, myself, or the six versions of myself kind of maybe communicating all at once. I don't have to rely on my partner or my friend or anything else. And that is sacred. So often, one of the other things that I teach on in addition to voice is confidence. And Celeste, we cannot have confidence if we don't have trust within ourselves. And trust is developed through communication, through consistent reliance. And when I'm able to come to a page and communicate the way that my boss made me feel in that meeting today, not only am I allowing my truth to be expressed, I'm validating my feelings. I'm saying that I matter. I'm saying that my experience is worthwhile. I might not be able to express that directly to my boss for a number of reasons, but what I do not want to do is to get into the habit of, if I can't express something directly to the persons involved, that I then go into a cycle where I just start gaslighting myself and saying, oh, just get over it. You can't do anything about it anyways, Hillary. You're overreacting. Those types of cycles are going to immediately chip away at my inner voice, at my ability to trust myself, at my ability to know what I'm feeling and honor what I'm feeling, which directly relate to my ability to have confidence and my ability to have my voice in the world.
So if I'm journaling to try to get started, and I'm also working on my authentic confidence as opposed to faking it until I make it, what are the different styles of communication that I might need to learn or teach myself, I guess? And by styles, we're usually talking about different types of conversations, right? How do you speak to your team as opposed to how do you speak to your CEO?
So knowing your audience is big, and this again goes back to our ability to be empowered. I get to consciously choose how I want to interact with this audience. I don't just show up by default and interact the way I interact. I have intention and attention around it. And we were speaking earlier about the importance of creating relatability with our audience. If I can't create relatability, there's no way I'm going to be able to create influence. Relatability is the first step. As a human brain, we like what we know. It makes us feel safe. It makes us feel comfortable. So as it comes to communication, I'm going to be paying attention to what are the communication styles or rituals of the majority of my audience. If I'm going into a C-staff meeting or working with the board, those communication rituals tend to have succinct communication styles. We are looking for clarity and consistency and conciseness as a pinnacle of communication. We are also looking for the adjective of confidence in those types of meetings. These are usually not communications where we are collaborating. These are usually not communications where we are looking to create buy-in. Well, I should take that back. These are usually not communications where we are, really delicate about giving and receiving feedback. These communications are usually about driving conclusions. And so with those things in mind, I know that diction is going to be one of the things that I really focus on, because when I focus on my diction, and specifically Celeste, the endings of my words in D's and T's, it shores up my communication style like audible bullets. And suddenly what I have to say, regardless of what I'm saying, sounds more crisp and more concise. That's the overall objective that I'm looking for in this communication style particularly, or in this communication experience. I also know that rather than focusing so much on my melody of my speaking style, which would be more my inflections, I'm going to be focusing on the power. And what I mean by that is both projection, which is volume related, but also emphasis. Emphasis is this percussive hit that we put on our communications that give it more oomph. And you can hear me trying to imitate or create an example for you in this moment while I'm speaking. And so this percussive hit not only, again, is helping to create that conciseness, that clarity, that confidence, but it's bringing more of that emotional intelligence into my communication style. It's saying, hey, I'm here to drive success versus I'm here to drive success. You can hear it very quickly and very distinctly. One is telling you what I'm going to do. The other one is giving you a felt sense experience of what I'm going to do. And so when I'm speaking at those higher levels of senior leadership, I know that diction, emphasis are going to be two very prominent things in my communication style. I am not going to think too much about inflection. I might also be very aware of my pausing. Reason being, when we speak quickly, we have a tendency to sound like we don't want to be heard. That is often not the case, but we get trapped. And so I need to be mindful. Take up more space. Everyone in this room is kind of sussing each other out to see who is most comfortable in being in power. And when I can be in power, what that directly translates to in my communication style is just taking up more space. So when I'm able to project from a volume perspective, when I'm able to use those percussive hits of emphasis, when I'm able to use diction, and when I'm able to be focused on my pausing and not feeling like I'm needing to rush through my material so quickly, that's allowing me to create that perception of, oh, she's really confident in being in her power. And it's going to create that relatability for the rest of the like-minded communicators in the room.
Look, this podcast is called Women Amplified, and I would be remiss if I didn't then ask you how to respond to being interrupted.
Yes.
Because look, you and I both know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We are more like so much more likely to be interrupted and to be interrupted repeatedly.
Yes. So when interruptions occur, often it is, again, part of our female conditioning to minimize, to not push back, to just kind of take it. And I'm not advocating for that. I'm also not advocating that you get in someone's face, because we know that that doesn't really go very well either. So this does go back to knowing our audience. This is what I refer to as a respectful decline. A respectful decline is a very artful way to steer someone in a different direction. So you basically decline whatever it is they are presenting, but you do so in a way that allows their dignity and integrity to stay intact. So what I advise people to do is, if I'm speaking and someone interrupts me, I might say, Tom, I love that you are interested in this, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. As soon as I'm finished, I'm coming to you. And I don't wait for permission. I don't wait for an acknowledgement from Tom. I literally just come right in. So Tom comes in and says his statement, and I just dive right back into Tom. But I don't even wait for Tom to acknowledge what I'm saying. I'm looking at Tom and I'm saying these things, but I don't wait for an understanding from Tom. I literally say, Tom, I love that you're interested in this. I can't wait to hear more of your thoughts on this. And as soon as I'm finished, I'm coming back to you. So as I was saying, and then I completely divert my attention to the rest of the team.
Wow.
I could also, let's say if Tom repeatedly does this, or I know that Tom has a communication style like this, I might say, Tom, I want you to go ahead and write down, you are so in this, please write down everything you've got going on, because I really want to dive in on this with you. And I'm curious, what does Casey think? So now I'm really being specific. I don't want to give Tom the mic back at all in this meeting. I want to give Tom something to do. I also want to give Tom something to do that allows him to feel like he is engaged in the ways that he wants to, because that's going to make him a whole lot easier for me to deal with. And if I know that I don't want to ever hand the mic back to Tom, or if I want to give a long pause, I'm going to actually give the mic specifically to someone else. And so now what I've done is I'm still in power, but I'm not in power because I'm the one talking. I'm in power because I'm the one that's curating or corralling the conversation. Mm. Another option could be often very much, you know, women will be speaking and someone comes in and they start kind of running with their idea. If that happens, don't even give the mic back to Tom or direct it to someone else. Just bring it back to you and you start really filling in the gaps. Really, you know, noticing, oh gosh, okay, well, there's enthusiasm in the room for this. This is great. And you dive back in and you get even more expressive with it because that is allowing people to have, very often it is said, whoever communicates the most frequently and the most vividly about something will get the credit.
I want to, since we're talking about credit, before we go, let me get just a little bit more advice from you on how we should address it when our idea is co-opted by someone else.
This is tricky. If it's being co-opted in the moment, I would do exactly what we were just speaking of. Mm-hmm. And I would say, Tom, I'm so glad that you're resonating with my ideas. What I was originally thinking of with all of this is, and so I validate Tom, but I bring it back and I start speaking more about it. I fill in the gaps. I speak more in more detail about it. If I'm able to riff on this with detail and conviction, people are going to know that it's mine. Mm. If someone goes to co-op in a written communication or maybe in a meeting where I don't have a chance to reel things back in, I might do some version of what I just suggested, but then I might check in with myself. Is there any merit for me? Is it going to be advantageous for me? Not advantageous as in, is this a good use of my time? But is it going to get me what I want? Because sometimes there's just individuals that I know I have to just go around them. I cannot communicate directly with them. They're not in a place to hear this. Mm. But can I go to them directly and say, hey, really loved your, collaboration on the meeting there. Tell me, I hadn't heard from you at all regarding this initiative until today. What's changed? Tell me more about what you're thinking. So I really like to come from a place of inquiry because, Celeste, people will tell you all kinds of things. When they feel safe and when they feel like you actually want to hear what they've got to say. And probably not surprising, majority of individuals who utilize this communication style of interrupting or co-opting or taking over something, they also really have a mentality, personality where they like to be heard.
Yeah.
They love to hear themselves speak. So I play into that, knowing that I'm utilizing it to get the information that I need to maybe disarm a less than desirable pushback from them. And then I will creatively start to weave, oh, that's really interesting, Tom. Okay, so you've been thinking this all along. Great, okay. Well, did you not feel comfortable to come to me with that? You know, and I just drill through that. It's I realize it's a bit difficult when we don't have a real specific example to riff on here, but I find that that is a really good tactic if I'm needing to make direct communication or have a direct conversation with someone, to just really come from inquiry first and then bring in my boundaries. And again, you know, Tom, look, I appreciate that you want to partner on this. And in the future, this is what this is going to look like for me. And I know that that's going to help both of us get what we want and what we need. And this is another thing, to make it that you are there on their side to help them get what they want, that you're in it together, is another interesting reframe that usually works for people with this type of communication style and personality style.
That's great advice. All of this has been really great advice. And although we're out of time, I know that we could keep talking for another hour.
Yeah. big topic.
Yeah. Hillary, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Celeste.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Hillary Wicht, and hopefully you learned some practical skills that you can take wherever your professional journey takes you. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. And now,
online. Stay tuned to your email for some exciting announcements about our events coming up this fall and winter. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.